From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The first cases of the disease that would come to be known as AIDS emerged in the U.S. in 1981. Health experts initially thought it was a form of cancer, one that appeared to be spreading mostly among gay and bisexual men. Because of that, its seriousness was often dismissed. Here's journalist Lester King-Solving asking President Reagan's press secretary, Larry Speaks, about this in 1982. This is from a documentary by Scott Colonico called When AIDS Was Funny.
President, have any reaction to the announcement of the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta that AIDS is now an epidemic in 600, over 600 cases?
AIDS.
Over a third of them have died. It's known as gay plague. No, it is. I mean, it's a pretty serious thing. That one in every three people that get this have died, and I wonder if the president is aware of it.
I don't have it. Are you? Do you?
You don't have it. Well, I'm relieved to hear that, Larry.
Do you?
No,
you didn't, answer my question.
Well, I just wondered,
how do you know?
Does the president, in other words, the White House looks on this as a great joke?
No, I don't know anything about it, Lester.
By 1987, more than 40,000 Americans had died of AIDS-related illnesses. The gay and lesbian community grew frustrated with the government's slow response to the global health crisis. That year, at the National Gay and Lesbian March on Washington, there was a visual memorial to the lives lost, a giant quilt larger than a football field. Each panel was prepared by loved ones from around the country to honor those lost to AIDS, and now an exhibit is showing some of the panels that came from Central Illinois. It's called Sewn in Memory, and it's on display at the Spurlock Museum in Urbana. The exhibit also features interviews sharing stories about the people behind the panels. They were farmers, law enforcement officers, educators, activists, fathers and sons. Here are a few of their stories recorded and edited by journalism students from the University of Illinois.
Pat was tall and dark, and Bobby was short, blonde, and cute. And they'd been together quite a while, if I recall correctly. And Bobby was a farmer. That's why the John Deere tractor is on the quilt. And everybody that was local that knew them always identified him first as a farmer, because it was such an unusual vocation for a gay man to have.
When he was really sick, I did see him a few times. I don't know how many. There were times that he would not allow me to come when I wanted to come, because either there were sores on his face, he was not feeling well, or the appearance he thought was going to freak me out. I think looking back on that, I should have ignored him and gone anyway.
Panel is dedicated to Reuben, who died of AIDS. His life is remembered in this quilt. Reuben died homeless, living the last year of his life at shelters and on the streets of Champaign-Urbana.
When we first broadcast this conversation back in January, I was joined by Georgia King. She created a panel for her son, Greg Downey. He was from Monticello, Illinois, and died of AIDS-related complications in 1990. I was also joined by Jerry Carden. Back in the day, he was the first chair of the Gay Community AIDS Project in Champaign. He also created a panel to honor his friend, Stephen Patrick Gallagher. Stephen died in Urbana in 1991. So, Georgia, I'm going to begin with you. Where did your son, Greg, where did he grow up? What was that like?
He grew up in the Monticello area. We were away from here for a while, but we came back when he was in the first grade, and he attended Monticello schools from the first grade through high school.
And what was he like as a child?
He was a happy little boy. He was always wanting to please. He was always trying to do things for other people. He always put other people first before himself.
Can you talk about his coming out story? When did he tell you he was gay?
When Greg was in, high school, I always knew there was something that wasn't quite right, but I didn't know what it was. You know, back then, I knew very little about gay lifestyle, so I didn't realize what was going on, but I kept thinking there was something there. And I questioned him about it, and he always said, "Oh, Mom, I'm fine, I'm fine." Well, I guess it kept weighing on him, and I kept asking, and one day he called me on the telephone. He couldn't do it in person. He called me on the telephone. He said, "Mom, you remember what you always asked me, and I would never give you a truthful answer? I said, yes. He said, well, I am gay, Mom. I just want you to know.
And do you remember about what year this would have been? What, I mean, this was a much bigger deal, I think, then than maybe people who are younger today appreciate how difficult that might have been, that conversation.
Well, he would have been, I think he was a freshman in high school. Well, I'll have to do the math to figure out exactly when
that
was.
Sure. But I mean, this is, I presume, in the 1970s or 60 or some. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And back then, really, very, you really didn't hear many kids coming out and saying, I'm gay. You really didn't. It wasn't as easy to do, I think, as it is today, because people are more understanding. We've come a long way. We've got a long way to go, but we've come a long way.
Absolutely. All right, Jerry Cardin, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Like many of the men memorialized in this exhibit, you grew up as a member of the LGBTQ community in the Midwest. Can you talk about what was your upbringing like?
I grew up on a small farm in Iowa. Actually, it's just 10 miles over the Mississippi River into Iowa, southeast Iowa. And it was not a place that I felt like I could come out. I knew at an early age there was something different about myself. I didn't know exactly what that was until I read the term homosexual in a book. I think I was in about fifth grade, and that I just was so fearful that that might be true for me. And I'll spare you the whole story, but I became suicidal in high school, because I thought that the urges to experiment with men were going to pass. And I'd heard that it was maybe a stage that kids go through, but it turned out that it wasn't a stage I was going through. And I reached out to an evangelical church because I was told I could pray away the gay. And I learned, well, that doesn't work. And so I've had to come to terms with it over time. I used alcohol as a coping mechanism, and got very involved in that as well. And then when I went to college, I felt like I could experiment a bit more and determine whether or not I really was gay. I thought, well, how do I know if I haven't had sex with a man or a woman yet? And so that exploration kind of determined, yeah, you're more gay than you are bi. And but I met a professor in college that was 11 years my senior that latched on to me, and we had a relationship. I knew it wasn't the best thing for me because he drank a lot and I drank a lot. And that kind of continued through my college years. So it was kind of a rough coming out. I did come out to my parents in 1978 when I moved over here with that professor. When I say over here, to Champaign-Urbana. Because they weren't going to understand why I was moving to a town where I didn't have anything lined up as a job. I wasn't enrolled in school yet for my master's program. And my dad actually accepted it better than my mom did. He just kind of, it took him a little while, but he said, oh, I knew people like that in the Navy. He was in World War II and he was on naval ships. And so I think he'd been exposed to, shall we say, men confined in a small space kind of thing.
Interesting.
My mom was the one that had the hardest time with it. But we've worked through all that very, very, very quickly. And I met my current partner in 1981. So we just celebrated 40 years together, coming up on 41. And that's kind of my story.
Congratulations. Congratulations on the longevity there. You know, Jerry, you knew a lot of these men who I understand who are featured in this in these panels in the Sewn in Memory exhibit. You're featured in a video about Steve Gallagher. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
I met Steve Gallagher through one of the things that I started here in town. I've been very active in the gay community ever since I got sober. And part of that sobriety was starting a local gay and lesbian AA group, which was McKinley Foundation and Presbyterian Church on campus. They did the most programming for the local gay community, and I always like to give them a shout out because they were forerunners way earlier than even more liberal churches. And I met Steve through that AA group, he had been working at the Lamplighter, which probably older folks on this radio program in the Champaign-Urbana area would recognize that as being kind of the premier restaurant in Champaign-Urbana at the time, which then eventually morphed into Kennedy's and then Kennedy's at Stone Creek. Luke Kennedy was the owner, and Steve became really good friends with Luke and his wife. And Steve eventually became the maitre d' at that restaurant. So he was very well known in the community of people that went to the Lamplighter. And Steve, I think, suffered from a lot of the issues that go along with restaurant work, and that it's hard to wind down at the end of the shift. And it was not uncommon, I guess, for them to find him the next morning that he had sampled a little bit too much of the wine room that he was the steward of. And his alcohol problem got worse and worse as time went on. And then he eventually had to give up that job and get into sobriety. But I met him through the Gay and Lesbian AA group, and we became fast friends. He was my closest friend outside of my relationship.
Sure. Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing about your own experience and his experience, Jerry. Appreciate that. Let me just take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about a new exhibit that's in Urbana at the Spurlock Museum. It's called Sewn in Memory, and it shares some of the stories of the people who were memorialized in the AIDS quilt, the AIDS Memorial Quilt, individual panels about people from Central Illinois, men from Central Illinois, who were some of the earliest people who died from AIDS-related complications. It's to this day, it remains one of the largest community art displays in the U.S., I should say, the overall AIDS Memorial Quilt Project. We're talking with Jerry Carden, who helped work on a panel of the quilt for his friend Stephen Gallagher, and also Georgia King, who created a panel in memory of her son, Greg. Georgia, can you talk about Greg's telling you that he had been diagnosed with HIV or AIDS?
He and I had gone on a trip together. We were in Venezuela. And while he was there, he got very, very sick. And I really didn't know what was wrong with him, but I just knew that he was very sick. So we came home as quick as we could come home. And I took him straight. At that time, he was living in Louisville, Kentucky. And I took him straight to the hospital there. And of course, they admitted him. And we ran several tests, and a doctor came and talked to us and everything. And at that point, I still didn't know really what was going on. And finally, after some time had gone by, the doctor said he wanted to talk to me. And he, at that point, told me that Greg was not only HIV positive, he had full-blown AIDS. And I really didn't know anything about AIDS. So I had to do a lot of quick learning.
Yeah.
I read everything I could read so that I would be educated enough to know what was going on. And Greg was a sister's programmer for the city of Louisville, so we got him well enough that he could go back to work for a while. But as time went on, it was very obvious that he was not going to be able to do that. So I used to go along with his father. We would take turns. We'd go back and forth to Louisville to take care of him. And finally, it got to the point where I knew we were beyond that, because he was getting worse as time went on. So I brought him here to my home in Monticello and took care of him until his death.
It's great that he had you to look after him in those final days. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Jerry, can you talk about some of the conversations happening around the Midwest in the 1980s as people were learning more about this disease?
Well, I mentioned earlier that my husband and I got together in 1981, and that was early in January. The end of January. And so we're coming up on our 41st next week. And so as a young couple, and we were a lot younger then, of course, you're wanting to be sexually active. And it was about the middle of the year, July or August, when we began reading in the gay press. And this was all before the internet. I want people to remember that we did not have the internet to search for answers or connect with other people. So we just relied on newsletters from, the larger cities. And we began to hear about this strange illness that was showing up in gay men. And they started coming up with names for it. And some of the first names were gay cancer and then GRID, gay-related immune deficiency, and other kinds of pejorative terms. And we were scared because we thought, gosh, if this is in the larger cities, because we was, you know, New York, Houston, San Francisco, we're seeing lots of cases. And we thought this may eventually hit us. So a lot of us started talking about it, you know, at social events. And you didn't want to talk about it in a way because you would hope that it wasn't going to happen. We were in denial. But then we began to hear about cases locally. I worked in the healthcare system at a place called Burnham Hospital, which was one of the hospitals here in town. We had like five at the time. And then Burnham had their first case, which was somebody from the Bloomington area. And they were like an executive or a professor at the university, and they didn't want anyone in Bloomington to know. So that's why they came to Champaign-Urbana for treatment, because there was so much stigma. People just did not want friends or family to know what was going on.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We need to take a break there. And we're going to continue this conversation when we come back. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking about the AIDS Memorial Quilt and specifically an exhibit in Central Illinois looking at panels from the quilt that are from memorializing men from this region. It's called Sewn in Memory. It's at the Spurlock Museum in Urbana. We're talking about it with Jerry Carden, who was the first chair of the Gay Community AIDS Project in Champaign. He also created a panel to honor his friend, Stephen Patrick Gallagher, who died in Urbana in 1991. We're also speaking with Georgia King, who created a panel for her son, Greg Downey. He was from Monticello and died of AIDS-related complications in 1990. I should also say, if you go to our website right now, 21stshow.org, you can see some of the images we're going to be talking about in this next part of our conversation. There are also videos there from produced by University of Illinois journalism students sharing some of those stories. We'll hear an excerpt from that in a few moments. But Jerry, I'm sorry I had to interrupt you before our break. You were talking about some of the first people who came to be diagnosed with HIV and AIDS in Central Illinois. When did you learn that your friend Stephen had AIDS?
Well, as I want to back up just a little bit, because sure, we were beginning to see the cases, and there were several of us that were interested in doing something locally, and there were some people interested in doing support services for people with AIDS, and that turned into the Buddies Project. And then there were people like myself with health education degree to do education for the community, both the gay community as well as the larger community, to help dispel some of the myths and stereotypes. And information was changing all the time. But again, we didn't have the internet like we do now in the age of COVID. So the Gay Community AIDS Project formed in 1985, and we began doing those two major activities that I talked about earlier. And I just want to make sure that people understand that the Gay Community AIDS Project, which is now called the Greater Community AIDS Project, did not exist just to do these quilt panels. The quilt panels were kind of an outgrowth of people that you know, had loved ones that were ill or had died from AIDS. So I met Steve probably 86 or 87 when he first joined our local AA group. And as I said, we became fast friends. We had a lot of the same interests. We loved conversation and debate, and I don't know, we hit it off. There was kind of a soulmate connection there.
And what was the process like of learning that he had contracted HIV?
There was not a test for HIV until around 86 or 87. And I don't have the timeline in front of me, but we had to wait years for any kind of a test. And that's very, very different than for COVID right now. And at first, we were being told, don't take the test because there's nothing they can do for you. None of the AIDS cocktail drugs were available, like AZT. And so people were afraid that if their insurance company found out, they would be dropped from insurance or their employer. There were so many cases of discrimination going on. And I opted not to take the test. And over time, Steve became very curious and he decided to take the test and it came back positive. And so then I was thinking, well, gosh, I could be too. So I went ahead and tested and came back negative. And then there was a little bit of that, I guess, survivor guilt going on, not too much, but it was like, well, you know, why him and not me? But it became a process that we just coped on a day-to-day basis, like we do with our, you know, staying away from alcohol. And I'd say that the support that we got in the AA community and what we had learned in the AA community, especially about that day at a time, keep it real, know what you can do today and just keep trudging along. And then he eventually, you know, developed the various opportunistic infections, like pretty much all the cases of AIDS. And there were so many that people could suffer from. And for Steve, it affected his brain and affected the speech centers in his brain. And that was so sad because that was what he really enjoyed, was that witty repartee and the debate and talking. And then he got to the point where he couldn't.
Yeah. Thank you again for sharing your memories of him. I want to take some time now to listen to some of the stories. We're going to talk about the quilt for the rest of our conversation and the panels themselves. The journalism students at the University of Illinois have collected some of them. And again, this is from an exhibit called Sewn in Memory. It's at the Spurlock in Urbana. It's not just quilt panels. There are also interviews sharing stories about the people behind the panels who, again, these were farmers. They were law enforcement officers, educators, activists. These people were fathers and sons. Here are a few of their stories, again, recorded and edited by journalism students from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
Pat was tall and dark, and Bobby was short, blonde, and cute. And they'd been together quite a while, if I recall correctly. And Bobby was a farmer. That's why the John Deere tractor is on the quilt. And everybody that was local that knew them always identified him first as a farmer, because it was such an unusual vocation for a gay man to have.
When he was really sick, I did see him a few times. I don't know how many. There were times that he would not allow me to come when I wanted to come, because either there were sores on his face, he was not feeling well, or he just, the appearance he thought was going to freak me out. I think looking back on that, I should have ignored him and gone anyway.
This panel is dedicated to Reuben, who died of AIDS. His life is remembered in this quilt. Reuben died homeless, living the last year of his life at shelters and on the streets of Champaign-Urbana. Reuben's favorite hobby was writing lyrics and collecting 45s. Which he played for hours at a time. Even when he did not have a home, he carried notebooks of the lyrics around with him. The music notes represent this aspect of his life. Reuben spent years of his life in prison. The prison scene is symbolic of those years. He was sentenced to 3 years in prison for stealing food to eat when he was homeless. Reuben seemed different after this occurred, less full of life, more to himself. And then he was sick, and we all lost Reuben.
Scott had his whole life in front of him, and he, you know, and he loved what he was doing. And you know, he was a master gardener for the Parks Department in Oakland, and you know, just creating just this beautiful landscaping. Such a waste, such a loss.
People hear, like, the AIDS epidemic, they think New York, San Francisco, big cities, Washington, D.C., but they don't think of Champaign-Urbana and, you know, fathers, partners, lovers, friends, sons. They all died. It's happened here, and it's still here. It's not going away. that's just part of history.
Georgia King, you created a panel in memory of your son. Can you tell us what is on Greg's panel?
It was a poem that I had written for him. I don't have it in front of me where I can tell you what it was. It was just things about him, things that I would always be there for, different things, you know, to help him, to love him. And on his quilt panel, I had a picture of him as a baby. And then I had a picture of him when he probably, it was when he was still in good health.
I understand that you sewed the quilt panel yourself. Can you talk about what was the process of making it like for you?
Well, it was something I really wanted to do. I'm very glad that I did it. Actually, I made two. There's one that went to nationals and the one that stays local. Mm. It was a way of always having Greg here. I still have the poem, you know, that was on the quilt panel. Of course, I still have these pictures, but it was just a way for me to have other people remember him also. And to realize that he was a son that was loved very much, and that he was a very good person.
Yeah. I think that people have this idea of quilts that they, you know, the warmth and enveloping and this sense of comfort. I wonder if making this quilt brought you comfort.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Yeah. And it was a way of honoring my son.
Sure. Jerry Carden, I understand there's a crown on Stephen's quilt. What does that symbolize?
There were two of us that kind of spearheaded the effort on Steve Gallagher's quilt. And I was not exactly in favor of the crown, but, you know, it's a quilt panel by committee. And Steve Otto, who was a mainstay of GCAP during the years that he was here in town, decided that Steve really wasn't what you would think of when you think of a gay man as a quote queen, because he was not really effeminate. And so sometimes I think people get that impression from seeing the crown on his panel. But Steve Gallagher became very, very involved with those early days of GCAP. And because of his love for knowledge and his thirst for learning, he was combing all of the literature and keeping up with all the recent developments with AIDS. And he became the first paid administrative assistant for GCAP, which was really just a part-time position because we were just a hand-to-mouth organization at the time. We did not have a lot of funding. And Steve was really kind of the queen that held us all together. So that's kind of the symbolism of the crown.
I understand you were also part of the creation of these videos that go with the display. What was it like to reach out to family and friends of these men from the quilt panels?
Well, I want to back up just a little bit and make sure we get this into the program, in that this project just grew organically from the standpoint of, I want to get the name of Professor Catherine Oberdeck in here. She is a history professor at U of I, and she had a class called History Harvest. And this whole thing grew out of the particular class that she was teaching, and I believe that was in 2019, the first class. They had an interest in documenting LGBTQ history. And the whole class was intended to help teach students in history how to archive, how to do metadata, things like that. And so a friend, Nathan Alexander, had heard about this class, and he knew I'd been around a long time and had a fair amount of history of our local community. So Nathan asked if I'd go talk to the class. Well, we did, and it was a wonderful partnership, and we got all kinds of history on different aspects of the local gay community, including the AIDS quilt. Well, the students had no idea what had happened during the AIDS era. So we did a lot of education about the AIDS quilt and how it got started. And I want to make sure that people know that if they go to AIDSmemorial.org, that they can see the National AIDS quilt, and they can actually plug in the name of people that they might know and find that panel. So anyway, the class, we were wanting to get pictures of the quilt panels, professional grade pictures. And that led to somebody talking to, I think it was Beth Watkins or someone else at Spurlock Museum. Well, that's how the whole quilt panel exhibit came to be, was just, it grew organically. We got the pictures taken there. And then they said, oh, we want to do an exhibit in the lobby. And the exhibit is actually up through July. And then we were talking with WILL, Kimberly Chronic, and Kimberly and Stretch Ledford, Professor Ledford from the journalism department, have a class that they teach through Illinois Public Media and WILL. And the class actually met there at the Campbell Center. Mm-hmm. And so they were the ones that actually were contacting people. And I was kind of that central pivot point because sure. I knew a lot of people and did the networking in order to try and get folks together for those interviews. And for the people that heard the interviews, those were different people talking about different panels.
Just a few minutes left, or I should say even a couple minutes left in our conversation. I understand there were people that you couldn't find who was behind the panels. I wonder if that's indicative that maybe a lot of people from this part of the country were silently struggling with AIDS.
That was one of the issues. And I know one panel, it's just a person's first name, Mike. And some of the panels were actually made by a group of people that did not know the guys, some of the guys that were died and we had names of. They just knew some information about them. But there was a group that met at McKinley Presbyterian and Foundation on Thursday nights that just worked on panels. Joan Lathrop, the head of the social work division at Champaign-Urbana Public Health, was a mainstay in that. And there were some people that we just didn't know, but people wanted to memorialize them. And some of the people, I think there were folks around then that knew them, but over time, those connections got lost. So we hope that people that see the exhibit or see some of the panels on the website, if you know these people, please get in touch with either the folks at Spurlock or myself and let us know, because we're still building stories. And sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Jerry Carden and Georgia King. Thank you both so much for being with us today on the 21st and sharing your experiences and the stories of your son and friend, respectively.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Both Jerry Carden and Georgia King created quilt panels to honor loved ones they lost to complications related to AIDS. The panels are part of the NAMES Project, AIDS Memorial Quilt, which was first displayed at the National Gay and Lesbian March on Washington in 1987. You can view the quilt panels at the Spurlock Museum in Urbana as part of the exhibit Sewn in Memory, AIDS Quilt Panels from Central Illinois. There are over a dozen panels there, originally made in the 80s and early 90s for the AIDS Memorial Quilt by residents of Central Illinois. You can also view them online. We'll have a link to the exhibit from our website, 21stshow.org. That's 21stshow.org. We'll also have some video projects made by U of I journalism students recounting some of the men memorialized in the quilt. More to come on the 21st after a short break. Stay with us.